This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Tonight we are supposed to be talking to the people that interview you as a person of distinction. They are not in-house yet. So we're going to start anyway. I'm going to see my co-host right now so he can say something.
Hello, Jenny White.
How you doing?
I'm good. TGIL.
All right. I know that's right. So I see someone that I think might be my guest. Hello,
hey,
guest. Hi. How you doing?
How are you doing? Wonderful.
I'm fine.
Wonderful.
What did you neglect to do?
Well, I was expecting it to ask me to press one. It just said for me to wait, so that's the reason why I didn't press one. But I can easily hang up and call back in and press one. That's fine.
Oh, no. Come on. I got you now. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful.
Okay.
My father is just finishing up a meeting, so I'm going to call him in about 60 seconds to patch him in on this, okay?
Okay. And have him press
All
the
right.
one. Okay.
Well, I was going to merge him in on my line.
Okay. However you want to do it. I want you to meet
But like
my...
I said, if it...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to introduce Go ahead. Benji. Go ahead, Benji.
What I was going to say, if it helps in terms of recording or in terms of just your platform, I can easily hang up, call back in, and press one. This way it'll be following the procedure that you're accustomed
to. No, I just needed to know you were here yourself, but I
gotcha.
Recognized the number, so I knew it was you.
Perfect.
That's all.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't have to
all
go
right.
through all of that.
Okay.
No,
yeah.
I'm introducing you to my co-host, Mr. Coleman.
Yes, yes. Hi, how are you doing?
How are you, Mr. Coleman?
Wonderful, wonderful. Introduce, what's his name, Jenny White? Who are we talking to?
Well, let him
My name is Benji
himself.
Cole. Absolutely. Yeah. My name is Benji Cole. My father and I, Al Cole, we actually run our own broadcast station called People of Distinction, which I had the pleasure of interviewing Jenny White not too long ago on our platform.
Very good. I got an opportunity to listen to that on YouTube. That was a great interview.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Listen, I was just following Jenny's lead.
Oh,
Benji?
Yeah. Now,
it was a great discussion to have.
That's my son, Benji.
All right.
Good,
there you
good.
Go. Keeping it in the fence, yeah. A family affair. I like it.
Yeah.
Right,
is it that
right.
what you do?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, how long
I can appreciate
you and your father, yeah, how long you and your father had the podcast?
Well, he had the broadcast himself for a number of years. I joined probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
So we've been working together for that time. Prior to it, I was working with him off and on, not doing interviews, just kind of offering my feedback and helping him with it. But my father's been in broadcasting now for well over 20 years, between WZLX in Boston through CBS Radio. And then from there, after he had built his fellowship, started to create his own radio station, which is, of course, now People of Distinction.
Very good. Very good. Now, how often do you broadcast? Is it daily? Is it weekly?
Yeah, well, it depends. All of the shows that we do, we never do them live. They're always pre-recorded. So we will broadcast daily, Monday through Friday, I guess, not technically daily. But Monday through Friday,
okay,
during the weekdays, we broadcast our shows depending on whichever author we have and, of course, the solidified time slot. And with that note, my father is calling me right now. Give me one moment, guys, and let me
Okay. Okay. So what we can do is we can go to break, and we'll be right back.
We'll be back to the Let's Talk About It, Jenny White Show.
Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families across the entire state, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know, if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this ad on this show for a free gift.
As an author, you understand the devastation of someone plagiarizing your work, but what if someone stole your identity? Protect yourself and your family with identity theft protection. Services include credit monitoring, credit reports and scores from all three credit bureaus, social security number, emails, credit cards, bank account monitoring, and social media monitoring from Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. For more information, call 248-525-7680.
And we're back. Talk about it.
Okay, so we're back, and I'm hoping my guest is here with his dad, Benji.
Absolutely. Hey, Jenny, yes, we are on the line. My father is here with us as well. Dad, you can hear us, right?
Yeah, yep, I hear you fine.
Hi, Dad, welcome.
How are you? You're Jenny. Jenny White. I've heard a lot about you. How are you doing, Jenny?
I'm fine. Thank you, sir. I've listened to you quite a bit. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you and Benji are here. And I need for you to just kind of explain a little bit about yourselves and how did all this start?
All right. So, Benji, you're the principal, so you talk yourself first and after you.
Absolutely. Right. Well, in terms of the specific origins of People of Distinction, my father can articulate that. He started the company a number of years ago, and, of course, he comes from broadcast background. As I stated before, I am now the host of People of Distinction and VP of Alcohol Enterprises. I've been working with him for a number of years now, about just under 5 years that I've been partnering up with him, and very successful broadcast. We love doing what we do, and you know, again, right there in the title, People of Distinction, we firmly believe that everybody that comes to our network, regardless of the caliber of work that they've put forth, everybody has a voice, and everybody is distinct in their voice. And we try to keep that mission statement alive and well. And I think I've been doing a good job. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, Jenny, we enjoyed having you on, of course. Primarily, we work with authors, as you know. We were able to, when we had you on our broadcast, for our interview, we covered your book, Daddy, What Is Racism, which we had fantastic feedback for. The number of people that have reached out, and of course, racism, as unfortunate, but I guess it's a double-edged sword, because it's unfortunate in one way, but also very good that discussions are being had nowadays with regards to it. We had a lot of very positive feedback in terms of just that representation and really getting the conversation started, and what was so unique about your book that we truly loved and our listening audience loved as well is a lot of times I think we shy away from the topic of racism when it comes to children, as if we're trying to protect them from something. But of course, you know, depending on the community you come from, depending on the family you come from, and specifically within the marginalized community, we know that it is something that we need to be prepping our children for earlier and earlier, as unfortunate as that is. And again, we had a lot of very great feedback for that. And we're hoping, you know, through those discussions, we'll be able to knock down barriers in the future. But, you know, this platform, People of Distinction, is very fortunate, not only for the authors that get to come on our network and showcase their book, but also, again, just to start the discussion, you know, just to have it. And I'm always very, very excited to have authors that come on and you know, the varying backgrounds in which I've met people from, you included. I think it's always wonderful because the education for me is continuing, right? And the knowledge never stops. So it's definitely something we feel very blessed to do, and we've been doing it for a number of years and hopefully a number of years to come.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you got some good positive comments on my interview. That makes me feel a lot better. So, Dad, tell me, yeah, what made you want to start that?
Yeah, I can answer that one. People of Distinction was started by my parents. I'll put it that way. Because they brought me into this world knowing that I was a distinctive person. They brought me into this world with love. And because they loved each other so much. And that makes a person's distinction right from the get-go. My mother and father, deeply in love, both people of distinction to each other. In other words, they honored each other as people of distinction. They honored each other and accepted each other as well as loved each other. That is what I call a person of distinction. Now, that's everybody. Even if we don't know that we're doing that, we also have the potential to do. Everybody has the potential to love. It's like that baby that, you know, we're born in. That baby comes out and says, "Well, I love life. Thank you, life, for inviting me into this beautiful experience. I love being alive. It's the greatest blessing in the world, being alive at all." And if we can impart that on our children, if we can teach our children, look, you're alive. You're already ahead of the game. And now we're going to teach you how to be more alive, to love. And if we do it through example, like my parents did with me, and also my sisters. Now we go forth into the world and we teach love in our mechanism with life, in the way that we relate to other people. And sometimes we don't even have to say a word. It's energy at that point. It's an energy transformation that we're giving to people to uplift them, sometimes with a look in our eyes, sometimes with just pure energy. And we're saying to each other, look, we're part of the human family. I love what you're doing, Jenny. With Daddy, What Is Racism? That is something that, like Benji was saying, right? It's unfortunate that we have to even deal with that, but we do. But I would like to say, well, what about a Martian? Okay, a Martian comes down to Earth, and start to cause a lot of trouble. And maybe a few Martians come down to Earth, start a lot of trouble. And maybe somebody's Alpha Centauri. Maybe other universes. Who knows? The human family will get together, and now they're not worried about racism. They're saying, hey, look, we're all human. And now, you know, we have invaders from non-humanoid systems, maybe Mars, maybe Alpha Centauri, maybe this, maybe that. All of a sudden, racism slips away, and we're all just human beings right now, defending our human being Earth. So, see, racism and that divide and conquer thing comes from not so much our soul. We're not born with that, I don't believe. It comes from certain sorts of systems that we're born under that right from the get-go, we're learning things and being pumped into things that we don't necessarily think are natural. We are actually, it's follow the leader. Our parents have been brainwashed in certain ways to think that, well, maybe sometimes it's better to be this race and that race, and then it imparts upon us. And then we think, well, by the time we're 17, 18, 19, 21, we're supposed to be adults at 21, we're so full of maybe, you could even say, the jive of this system indoctrinating us to think that our different races to begin with, and we're not really human beings unless we're white, unless we're black, unless we're Hispanic or Asian or Native American or whatever. But the thing is, we're all human beings. We all have the same need for love. And if we just think in terms of what we have in common rather than what we have in different, whoa, we can make a big difference in this world because we are saying, just like Dr. Martin Luther King, I love you, not necessarily just because of, you know, what it looked like on the outside, but the content of your character on the inside, the content of how much you love and respect other human beings. Now, that is not anything that's racist. That cuts across all racial barriers. That is what that little baby was born for, to love each other. All the babies love each other and say prayers for each other all the time, that we elevate ourselves through love, love energy on this planet. That's what I have to say, Jenny.
Okay, I got you. Now, what are you running for office?
I'll tell you. I want to run for the office of getting everybody else empowered in this world and on this planet. All of that 99% that we always hear about in the news media, and maybe just the opposite, we hear about the 1%. I think it's the 99% that should really be in power, running for office, being the president of the United States, and, you know, all of the presidents of all of the world. And these are the people who should be in Congress. These are the everyday people with human genius. And they want to impart that human genius with other people who are like them, who live in the same neighborhoods with them, who go to school with their children. You know, that's what we really need. We don't need separation of millionaires and billionaires out there who tell us that they can relate to us, but they're not living in our neighborhood. Their kids aren't going to our school.
And they don't want us in their neighborhood either.
You got it. See, the 99%, they should be running for office. They should be in the driver's seat as far as politics, as far as the way that maybe the economics of this society works. There shouldn't be any poor people. There shouldn't be any, certainly, there shouldn't be any people who are hunger stricken and people who are actually dying from hunger, dying from starvation around the world, dying from impure water sources. We know that 4 million kids a year just that way. So 4 million kids a day, sorry, I said a year, 4 million children a year around the world are dying from impure water sources. See, that's part of our 99% that we have to salvage.
Yeah. And now we have the coronavirus. That doesn't help us.
It doesn't help at all. And we know, not to belabor the point, but COVID has hit the black community more than a lot of the other communities and the people of color communities a little bit more. So let me mention one other thing. I'm not trying to – Benji has great things to say, but one other thing I want to say here. Now, recently, Hurricane Ida hit Louisiana.
Yes.
And hit it hard.
Yes.
And then went up north and started, you know, hitting some of the northern Pennsylvania. But then certainly kind of devastated New York City and parts of New Jersey. Well, I feel for these people. I think
yes.
everybody should feel for these people. And the major news, and I come from that at CBS Radio, major news media, we have, you know, mayors of cities, we have governors of different states that were hit bad. Well, those governors or any of those mayors ever said, even though they're reaching out to the people and saying, well, we have so much compassion. But I don't think that there's any information about how did Hurricane Ida affect their premises, their homes, their condos. I don't think that there's any information about that. Any of the, you know, New York City, the mayor of New York City has to live in New York City. New York City is practically devastated by flood.
Oh, wow.
Did that hit the mayor of New York City residents? How come nobody talked about that? And if they did talk about that, maybe the mayor of New York City, maybe all of a sudden, he's saying, well, no, it really didn't hit mine. And if he had to be completely honest, I'm not saying that it's not. But if he did have to be completely honest, you might say, well, you know, we're protected in ways that maybe the 99% aren't. Because you never hear about some of the big stars in our world getting hit by some of these quote-unquote natural disasters, hurricanes, tornadoes here and there, tsunamis. How come the big stars aren't getting hit? How come it's always just, you know, the everyday people? Know what I'm saying, Jenny?
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, freaky.
Yeah.
But they have to be. Some of them are. With the fires, mostly in California, a lot of them get hurt. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't.
You know, I feel terrible about the weather.
Oh, yeah. It seems every year, every single year, it gets worse and worse. I don't know. I wouldn't want to live in California, that's for sure.
Well, that's where Benji lives. And, well, I'll give the microphone to Benji. So
okay, sorry, Benji.
not a problem whatsoever. I mean, you know, the big thing, I feel like a lot of times news media will cover things in a way because, of course, their main goal is entertainment, right? I mean, they're
that's
giving
right.
news, but
that's
they know
right.
that the only way they're going to increase their viewership is by making it entertaining, right? And really by embellishing to a certain degree. And not to say that the fires aren't devastating, because of course they absolutely are, and they are wreaking havoc. And as you stated, Jenny, and you're absolutely right, every year it happens, and every year it seems to get worse and worse. Here in California,
yes.
really the main reason why it happens, of course, it's a culmination of climate control and just you know, things getting warmer around the earth. And California hardly rains here, so it's a very dry, barren area. So things, when they do catch flames, spread very quickly. So unfortunately, it's just a very bad concoction that leads to these devastating fires. But where I am in Southern California, thankfully for me, usually the fires are further north, where there's a little more space for the fires to breathe and travel. So I am safe, but of course our prayers are always going out to those that are affected by it, because millions of people are losing their homes and
absolutely.
By these horrendous things. So
absolutely,
that's my defense of California there for you, Jenny.
Okay, well, we're going to stop and take a break right now, and then we'll be back.
Just Jameen is a natural line of luxury creams and lotions. From our creamy shea to our thick frappe and our therapeutic body butter, we have eliminated the petroleum, the alcohol, and the water, and use natural oils and raw shea butter. Our products are made for the hair and the body naturally. For more information, visit us at www.justjameen.com or call us at 313-279-4494. That's www.justjameen.com. Lions Clubs International is a service or membership organization of over 1.7 million members worldwide. It was founded in 1916 in Illinois. Much of the focus of the Lions Club's work as a service club organization is to raise money for worthy causes as first responders. The Lions Club motto is "We Serve." Local Lions Club programs include sight conservation, hearing and speech conservation, diabetes awareness, youth outreach, international relations, environmental issues, and many other programs. The Lions acronym also stands for Liberty, Intelligence, Our Nation's Safety. For more information, contact us at lionsclubs.org.
Is your food bland and you want to spice it up? Does it taste like something is missing? What's missing is my seasoning, Butch's Bodacious Seasoning, all-purpose seasoning, good on absolutely everything but ice cream. I'm Linda Porter, President and CEO of Butch's Bodacious Seasoning. To get the spice back in your life, call me at 313-393-2738. You won't regret it. Thank you.
And we're back to the Let's Talk About It Denise White Show.
Okay, so we're back and we're at the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. And I would like to invite my listeners, if you have something that you would like to ask or make a comment about, then you press the 1, and then you will be able to talk to my guest. Just press the 1. So now we're talking about my people. And I would like to say I really enjoyed being on your show, Benji. I mean, it was really nice. I also like the picture, the way you fix it. And I think I'm going to make that a bulletin, one of those great big ones that everybody can see, because I really appreciate that. So you say you've been doing that for about 5 years, huh?
Been doing it, well, with my father, yes, for about 5 years. Now, my background is not in broadcasting. I actually come from an acting background. So as I stated before, I currently live in Southern California, have been for the past decade. So I've been here for just over 10 years now. Initially, of course, born and raised there in Rhode Island, New England boy, came out here originally for graduate school. Once I completed my master's program, absolutely fell in love with California, and of course it's a great scene here for television and film. So through my work, largely theatrical based, but actually developed a production company there with close friends of mine, where we started to, of course, make films and do things along those lines, and COVID hit. So everything has kind of come to a standstill with regards to our personal company that way. But as I stated, off and on working with my father, and then kind of now have taken it full time, where I run the day-to-day operations for specifically for people of distinction.
Okay, well, we have a listener who wants to say something. Hi, listener, how are you?
And how are you this evening, Ms. Jenny White?
I'm
enjoying your guest.
Oh, me
and
too.
I would like to ask them a special question. They're talking a lot about public radio and the control over public radio. Would that include your programs like yourself?
My show and Benji's show, People of Distinction, is not aired on public radio, per se, PBS, but it is aired on the Apple network that also airs PBS shows, airs CBS shows, and airs BBC and CNN, and a lot of the other big networks under the umbrella of Apple's iTunes radio network in general. And so we know certain people over at CBS, and you know, certain people in other major media that way. So that might give you a little bit of input in terms of the question that you might have been asking. Does that answer your question, or do you need more information that way?
I was just wondering how would it affect a program like your program, because they're talking about a lot more control and what's being broadcast and what's being said. How would that affect you? I was wondering.
It would affect it tremendously. And now I think I understand the tenor of your question.
Yes, sir.
Essentially, would we have the same sort of freedom to say some of the things that we say on People of Distinction if it were broadcast through TBS? I think it may be more to the heart of what you're asking. And the answer is definitely we would not. Public broadcasting has changed a lot over the years. It's not as free of a format as it used to be 20, 30, even 40, 50 years ago. It has become more corporate. And I don't think I'm saying anything out of line, because people in the industry know that public broadcasting has become more and more public. It's supported by very, very big institutions. And so you have to toe the line a little bit in what you're saying. You have to tone it down. Whatever Benji and I were talking about earlier with Jenny about racism and about, maybe certain phenomena that are happening right now with, the hurricane and other things, we couldn't talk as freely about that. And we couldn't really say, well, a lot of it is caused by, it's caused systematically, as I was saying, and some of the things that Denji was saying. We couldn't really talk so much about the system. We'd have to talk more about, kind of politics and what is, Congress people, what are they doing here, and, what is the president doing? But we really couldn't say too much about, hey, the system really needs to be changed. Because now it imperils a lot of their funding if we really go after the system, and I believe it has to be changed. Public broadcasting is not really into changing the system. It's just talking about the system as it is, and what is Biden doing now for this or that, or what are certain Congress people doing for this or that. But it's not really saying, do we really need a president who is partisan, who is either a Republican or a Democrat. Maybe most people in this country don't want a president to be partisan. And it's not asking the question, well, do we really need Congress people who are largely funded by a lot of big companies? Maybe we should have everyday Congress people who are paid half as much as these Congress people are and have maybe just 10% of their perk, but they have 200 more percent of the real value of what Americanism really is. Because that can be, it could not be discussed in the same way on public radio or PBS these days. unfortunately. So that's, you know, that's a that's more of an in-depth answer to the question. I hope it answered your question.
It did. I would like to also ask another question. When you were talking earlier, you talked about the love that you saw between your parents, and it inspired you. You talk about love in a more general way, but when you look at the situation that we're facing, since most of our homes are not from two-parent homes now, and the children, you know, are affected by that, and realistically, how would you teach a child about love like that? When maybe the mothers, you know, are not up to par, you know, maybe she's never experienced the type of love that she wants. I think she has a whole lot of children out of wedlock that she, you know, she just never found that too, you know, that love to give to her children or to bring the family together. How would you, talk to them about love, the love that you had, the security with your mother and father and their interaction and things like that? Because when you talk about love, it's a general thing, you know. You can talk about love from, I like ice cream, I like this, I like that, you know, whatever. But to get that down to love where it affects a person and lets them know that they're a human being no matter what their, you know, situation, how they started, how would you get that love across to a person like that? It's my understanding that I heard some figures that about 85% of the males that we have locked in the prisons, that most of them never had their father in the home. How would you, you know, get it across to them? How can you distinguish between love and love, if I want to say it that way?
Excellent. That's an
remember, you're the man. You're the man.
Well, thank you. And Ben,
I'm putting
Ben
it on you.
Now, I can answer that. I love that question. Thank you. And I'm glad Benji is here because I'm going to use an example. When Benji was much younger than he is right now, and then Benji can validate this as well, and then Benji can tell you about his ideas as well too. And Benji is an extraordinary human being. I feel honored being his father. When he was, let's say, 10 years old, he did something that required some discipline. And, you know, not unusual for a 10-year-old. I didn't hit him. It wasn't physical discipline. I said to Benji, okay, now, you don't have to tell me why you did this yet. I want you to write about it. And then, once you write about it, you come back and you read me what you wrote about why you did, you know, something that you did that was wrong. It wasn't terribly wrong, but it was, you know, wrong for a kid. And then we'll talk about it. That was the discipline that I imposed on him. Now, a lot of people would say, well, that's not discipline at all. Go, yes, it was. Because Benji wrote an essay on what he did, why he did it, and why it was wrong to do. And during the time that he wrote that essay, there were two things going on. He was thinking about it, and at the same time, he was learning how to express it in words. And after that, a third element came in. He presented it to me, read it to me, and then I reflected on it. So we were communicating. It wasn't a thing where hit, and, you know, not listening to my son. Now it was, we were communicating about this. He was learning. I was learning. And he had great ideas. And we agreed that, well, what you did was wrong, but, boy, you learned from that. And I'm learning from you, Benji. And it brought us closer together as father and son, but it also developed another thing. Benji became a great writer from this. He was not a great writer before, but he learned how to appreciate writing, putting his thoughts down in words. And not only did he never repeat whatever wrongdoing he did, at 10 years old, but then he started to teach other kids from the, you know, that quote-unquote discipline that I gave, which was positive discipline. And other kids started to learn that way, maybe other parents and everything, and by the time you get to high school, then we were actually, you know, part of the school improvement team and teaching people this and that, and started out with our relationship. with love and positive discipline. Benji can reflect on that too, because I think he remembers that situation. And why don't you reflect on that too, Benji?
Yeah, no, I remember that assignment vividly. And at the time, I hated it. It was not something I wanted to do. Definitely not something in the moment that I appreciated or could even foresee the benefit from it at the time. Now, years later, it didn't take me years, but now being an adult and looking back, I definitely recognize the benefit to that. And the education that I was able to receive from that type of punishment. As my father stated, there were so many things that came from it in terms of just being able to think about things more in depth. At that age, of course, you know, what 10-year-old really does think about things beyond the surface level. So having my hand forced in that regard really helped me, go below the surface, think about things a little bit more analytically. And then, of course, just from being able to formulate my words and put it down on page, I think, you know, a great resource that I know a lot of friends of mine utilize, and not so much me anymore, but journaling, right? I mean, that's essentially what we're talking about here. It's really just utilizing journaling as a way to showcase your thoughts and, again, reflect on things that have happened. So I definitely can attest to the value that was given. At the time, I did not like it, and, it was not something that I wanted. But, you know, something that I would like to say, to go a little bit deeper to your question, and, I hope I'm not stepping on any toes here, and primarily I mean that with regards to my father. I actually come from a divorced household. My parents, they separated when I was very young. And to get to your question, and of course, that is a question that has so many layers to that onion. We would have to peel back a lot to try to get to it. But just speaking from my experience, one thing that I loved so much about what each of my parents had done, and of course, your question was hinting more towards not only coming from or being raised in a divorced household, in a split-parent household, but also, you know, father figures or mother figures just entirely not being existent. So that is a different experience than I have. So to talk about that would be more generalized, but if I can articulate things from my perspective, coming from a household where I had my parents separated, even though they knew that their relationship had reached its point, its pinnacle point, where they needed to now go separate ways, they understood and they had the wherewithal to know, as for me, as their child, they knew their obligation, and they knew that what they had created was much more important and leaped the borders of their own dissatisfaction with each other. And I never felt, growing up with each one of my parents, and when I spent time with one or I spent time with the other, there was never a thing in my mind where I felt they had split up because of me, or I felt that they didn't love me in a way that they had that they should have, right? And maybe I didn't understand all of the layers to it. Being young and going through this experience, all I knew at that time, of course, was, you know, I'm with mom sometimes, I'm with dad sometimes. They are not together. And, of course, that potentially can have detrimental effects on a child's psyche.
Yep.
But luckily, they constantly let me know how much they loved me and how much love they had for each other, even though they weren't able to be together. And I think, to put it in the most simplistic point possible to answer your question on how that message gets received, it has to be through communication. Communication is so valuable and is so important, and it doesn't, even if you think the message has been honed in already, say it again. Say it three times. Say it four more times. Because from a child's perspective, growing up, doesn't matter how many times you tell them, they'll still think mommy and daddy aren't together because I was the one that separated them. Or there was too much uh-huh. going on because they had to take care of me, and that's why they're not here. So to know that, and especially now as an adult, I understand. And I don't have any children of my own yet. Fingers crossed, hoping to cross that bridge very soon. But
okay.
I understand that the love that you have for each other as partners, that may stop at a certain point, but if you bring a child into this world, that supersedes everything else. And you always have to make sure that you come together and you do what is right for that child. And that child knows that you have so much love for them, and they are a beautiful creation. They are a creation out of the love that was once there. And I think once that is constantly instilled, you know, after that, you know, your child will be all right. And, again, there's a lot more layers to it. I'm oversimplifying it, but I definitely feel like communication is a necessity.
I think that was
a
good answer. Did you get what you needed, Ms. Pang?
Yeah, I understand what he's saying. It's sad that so many other homes. Okay, go ahead. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you for calling. Appreciate that. I have another caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Okay.
My name is Charmaine, and I just love your topic about having children express their love more than what we see. And my situation is a little bit different. I'm a single parent. I had two children. My youngest son brought love into the home. And so he taught us as how to love, and that spread it among our whole family. And so with that being said, my son will always, every time he walk out the house, whether he did take out the trash, he always say, "Love you, Mom." I say, "You already taking out the trash." Anything that he did, it was always, "I love you, Mom. I love you, Mom." And he kept pouring that in us, where we hang up the phone, "Love you." Okay, "Love you." And as me growing up, I have seven siblings, and my mom and dad, I was around them. I never heard that much love from my child. So with that being said, I appreciate y'all coming on and saying this, because the kids have so much love in them when they come to this world. If we can just protect that innocence instead of us as adults living in society putting that pressure, that worldly pressure on them, we can help embrace that love so more children can express that love that my child has expressed among our family. So I just wanted to just share that with you guys.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks.
And I know my guest.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you very much for that, because I firmly
welcome.
Believe, again, when that love is instilled, when that message is there, listen, the world is going to shovel enough on your path, and it's
That's
going to derail
sure.
you at moments.
That's for
so if
sure.
you start at a very early age, which, listen, you know, getting full circle back to Daddy, What Is Racism, right, when we're talking about, I know it's a separate topic, but the importance really underlying that book is starting at a very early age. You are actually doing much more to protect your children when you articulate that to them at a very early age, and you continue to reinstill it as they grow. That's how you're preparing them for the cruel world that they're going to get out into once they're, you know, age appropriate, of course.
And
okay.
If I can,
thank you for throwing that.
Can I just add one thing?
You sure can.
Okay. I know he mentioned about the energy. My son has so much energy. People are like, "What are you giving this child?" And they said, "Whatever it is, you should put it in a bottle and sell it." It's like he will wake up with so much energy. I couldn't even go to the supermarket with him sometimes. I would have to kind of just say, "Okay, you know what? You won't have to stay home while I go to the market, because I will be chasing him around." It was just so hard to just keep him attained, because he just wanted to just run around everywhere. So the energy was the key, and that energy, he just expressed love everywhere. So that's all I just wanted to say. It is the energy.
And I think it passed on to his mother.
Yes, it did.
That's what I thought. Okay. Thank you, caller, for calling. I have another listener.
Is it possible that I could jump in here just for a second?
Sure.
Okay. Now, one of the reasons I love Benji so much is what he said earlier. When he mentioned he came from a divorced family, absolutely. And my son was conceived in love. And it didn't matter whether his mother and his father broke up at a certain point. Because we conceived Benji in love, we both loved him. And we love him tremendously to this day as a mother and a father. Love does not end, does not have to end at any certain point, even when a relationship breaks up. When a relationship breaks up, that's not the end of love. And a lot of people have to learn that lesson more and more in our society for the children and also for their well-being. If you love somebody, whatever time frame you love that person in, that person now can live within you. Even if that person ceases to live with you, can live on the inside of you, in your consciousness. And you can always have that love for that person without possessiveness and without greed and without regret. And see, his mother and I love Benji equally, and we love him so much that we put aside anything that maybe we couldn't agree on as man and wife for the sake of helping our child grow better. And Benji, wow, what a man he is now. And he's so respectful to other people, so loving, because we both learned that lesson, his mother and father, that, well, we can't live together. But that doesn't mean our son has to suffer. And as Benji said, we both loved him and reached out in our own way to help him to grow into manhood in a positive and beautiful way. And you can see the results. You can hear the results of Benji when he talks. And I'm so proud of him. I wanted to throw that in.
Yes, I've experienced that too. And I know he loves his parents. And I have another listener for you guys. Hello, listener. You're on the air.
Is that TC this time?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm enjoying the program. One of the things that I want to say that is that I've always thought that kids are born equal. They're born like a blank slate. But the parents they get are not. The parents are already got their little quirks and whatever. So how do you raise a child at an early age when the parents themselves don't know what love is? You know, because you know you sound your guest sounds like a very structured home, and that you know if a house is not structured, it's hard to put love in there. And most of the homes and the people we see now are the homes are not that structured. Now, it's not because of the parents. A lot of it's because the way society has interacted with the parents when they were younger. Because if my dad would have been born very rich, I would be at a different place than I am right now. And I think some of my values would be a lot different.
I know so,
because okay. I can see the difference between my kids that I've raised and my grandmother's kids, you know, my mom and all that. But there is a trend, because my grandmother was very, very religious. She was one, she loved you, but she didn't spare the stick or whatever. So my mother came from them. I've grown from my mother, and hopefully my son and my two daughters, I can see the difference in them because of the generational, I'll say, pass-through from a grandparent. So what about that person that never had or was ever shown any love or know what love really is? How do you get that household to now start looking at how to how to institute something that they've never felt before.
I can begin to answer that question. Benji will chime in as well. But part of growing up and part of nurturing a child is not just the parent's job. It's the community's job. It's a community activity. And there was a time in American history, and particularly in Black American history, where, and you mentioned it, Cola, where the community was involved. And if a parent couldn't, you know, maybe because they were young or whatever, they didn't have some of the experience in rearing their child, they would let grandma come in. They would let uncle come in. And everybody would do it with love. Nobody's trying to best out anybody else. Everybody knew that what they were doing was for the benefit of that child. But it wasn't just that. It could have been the neighbor. It could have been a very helpful and loving neighbor who said, all right, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. And how about if we try it this way? And giving that child constructive ideas and constructive discipline, and see that the parents were all for that. We live in a contentious society more and more now where the parents don't want to have outside interference as much. But we all need outside help. See, that's the thing. We need the community to come together, not just the parents or not just the family, but the community at large. We need a helpful and caring and loving community of people who care about their community so much that each and every child means something, and the community will help each and every child. And we can get back to that. There was a time that we had it more in our American society than we have now. But we can get back to that as long as we know what our goal is. We know what the problems are, and we know what our goals are. And one of the goals should be, hey, you don't need a lot of social media to do this. Sometimes parents have to get away from social media. They have to get away from, you know, entertainment. They have to really concentrate on their child and have daily conversations with their child. Communicate with their child. What do you love? What are the things that you really love about life? How are you really doing in school? Getting involved in maybe school activities with your child, talking to the teachers, talking to the principal, and talking to the community at large, getting involved in community activities. That way the child benefits as well. It is not just parents. It's also the community. That's my big point.
Seeing that you said that, let me respond to that. What do you do when a community, when the government itself can get you targeted? Okay? Because we know the people get those loving homes and everything, but what do you do with that family that the whole government has been targeting for generations and generations and generations and generations? Okay? So the community cannot grow no larger than what the government allows it to do. So when you have outside influence that's specifically targeting those families, okay? Because you got to remember, as people, as you think back, Black people have never owned a lot of boats, a lot of ships, or whatever. And I think it was just today they said submarine came with so many thousand pounds of cocaine that's headed for the city. And you throw that all in there on that community. Okay? So now, as time goes on and you lock them out of opportunities to the point where some of them can't see what an opportunity is if it came and knocked them upside the head. So there are other things that play. Yes, the community plays a big part, but the community is under attack. And to give you a good example right now, look at all the voting things that are changed across the United States. Now, I haven't heard not one person say, oh, that would be good for the Black neighborhood. We need to add more. So when you got a whole system targeting a specific area, how do you put love back in there when the government or the organization does not allow it to foster?
I know how to answer that, but I'm not going to answer it because I don't want to not give Benji the opportunity to answer that. But I will. After Benji gives his answer to that, I'll give mine as well. But I have to defer to Benji right now. Benji, what do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great question. And again, another question that is complicated and can't be answered in just a 5-minute answer, right? So we're not gonna cover all of the bases. What I would say in trying to really answer that and trying to tackle this, it really what I hear you saying and my closest resemblance to it will be, again, we're talking about systematic oppression. We're talking about systematic racism, right? When you're talking about the government holding down certain communities, this is something that we've seen in the history of our country a number of times. What I would say to that, and I'm absolutely an optimist at heart, so bear with me for my assumption of just wanting to believe in something greater. When we look at the civil rights movement of the 60s, we know that what they were dealing with, the government was absolutely against that entire marginalized community, particularly African-American community. But we know throughout the history of our country, whether it's African-American communities, whether it's Chinese community, whether it's the Mexican community, this government has a repeated resemblance of doing that to, again, marginalized communities. Now, what I would say to it is it still follows what my father was saying in terms of needing to have that structured community. Now, you can put together the community and you can build a community without the government. Now, you might not be able to take it as far as ultimately you can with the government's assistance, but we know and we've seen things happen through a community of individuals coming together on the same, with the same plan, with the same discussion, where they're moving towards a similar goal. For example, about a year ago now, of course, I'm sure everybody has become well aware of a lot of the social unrest that we've had going on in the country, specifically leaning back to the George Floyd killing. Now, once that happened and there was video that was put out, we saw the uprising that came from it. We saw people taking to the streets, people marching. Now, again, just because that was happening, it's not like systematic oppression has been completely dismantled and now we live in a perfect utopia. It's not the case. But we've at least started a discussion. I was out there. I remember being in Los Angeles and marching in the tens of thousands of people that were out that looked like me, that didn't look like me, but we were all marching towards the similar goal, making sure that our voices were being heard, making sure that we were being seen. And we saw that start to spread across the country. Conversations are beginning to happen. Again, there's so many different layers to this. My significant other, she is definitely more of a Malcolm X ideology that she believes in. I'm much more MLK, right, where she is revolutionary. Let's dismantle the entire system and rebuild from scratch. I am, listen, it's going to be a long road, but if we come together, if we continue to have these conversations, if we start to implement the right people in office, slowly but surely things will start to churn. The tide will start to churn. Now, a lot of times that change that's not going to happen fast enough, so it may not be a pleasing answer to a vast majority of the people, but I do believe that it can be done. That sense of community is really the way to have this system be dismantled and to continue to work for that or work towards that utopia. Because again, we know during the civil rights movement, the community that they had established, they were unified. Now they were dealing with a lot from the government perspective, but if there was one thing above all else, they were unified and they were making things happen. Not easy, And it definitely, I'm sure, wasn't enjoyable. Of course, I wasn't there. I'm too young. But I their example has been something that has, of course, lived throughout time. And I see that. I truly believe that community can be established by reaching out. We're all in the same boat. We're all being held by the same enemy. Go ahead.
Not true. Not true. Because now, if you go back, and we earlier this year, it was the, 100 Tulsa City? Well, the black community had their own, and they were building,
mm-hmm.
and they were growing, and then all of a sudden, what happened? Okay, now, and that's, it keeps going. Every time you start moving up and moving up and moving up, and people see you moving up, outside influences come to play. You know, take a great example would be the last election. Somehow only 13, I think the African-American community is about 13% of the U.S. population. And Trump knew that if he could target those specific areas, that people would come along with him. All right? So that's enough, you know. So every time you make one move, and they say that's because Obama became president and made the whole United States kind of look around and say, hey, wait a minute, somebody's taking over, and it ain't us. So let's, you know, we have to start putting things in place to make sure these people don't get out of place. So you can bring all the love you want to in the house while the government mm-hmm. is supplying drugs in the alley, and that will stop. I don't care, no matter what, you know, your home wants to do, because I got to believe that every parent wants their child to be healthy, educated, and whatever. But if I could make $1,000 a week instead of going to McDonald's making, you know, what, $200 a week, and I've always been poor, and my family always been poor, and for the first time in their life, they have not the priorities, but they have the cash to do things they never thought they would do, mm-hmm. and which is supplied by the government.
I hear everything that you're saying. No. Listen, this is a fantastic conversation, and I hear what you're saying, and this is the reason why I was saying, listen, this is a much longer conversation than just a 10-minute discussion. Now, I hear what you're saying, and I absolutely am in full agreement. There's always going to be obstacles placed in front of us. Even the discussions that we have been having within the past year about recognizing racism, it may not have dismantled the system yet, but I promise you, because I have been introduced to so many communities of people that now finally look at white privilege and recognize the privilege that they are given solely because of the color of their skin. Now, that does not mean that we are in the home stretch and everything is cleared.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much longer discussion. I do believe the only way to dismantle the system is to take it piece by piece. I don't think that we're going to be able to just have one particular answer that will clarify everything. And by no means am I saying love is going to do it all. Love is what we need to have. Right, respect for each other is what we need to have, but that's not like we're not naive. We know that that's going to require a lot more. I do believe in the country that we live in, unless we're going to follow Marcus Garvey and go back to Africa, if we're going to stay here in the United States, there needs to be a way to continually dismantle the system. It starts through discussion. From that discussion, communities will be formed. From the community, I do believe getting into politics and receiving proper education, because I also think that that is another thing that, especially in marginalized communities, and I remember because I grew up in one, I didn't learn about African-American history until I was in college. Well, that's a lie. I was a junior in high school when I had my first African-American history course. Prior to that, the only thing I ever knew about African-American was slavery, right, and where we came from. That was the only history I had known. So education is very important. But again, this is such a huge problem that we're dealing with that once we figure out one, as you said, another one's going to pop up. But we slowly but surely, I I firmly believe you can start to dismantle it. It won't happen overnight. And again, I'm an optimist, but at the same time, I'm a realist. I don't think it's going to happen in my generation. Maybe will not happen in my kids' generation. But if I start now and I continue when I have kids to implement this education with them and have a community around of people that I am spoken to, like-minded people, regardless of what the government is doing, I choose my friends. I will have discussions with my friends about what the government is doing and make sure that they are all aware and we are communicating and there's an education, at least amongst us. We forward that education to our children, and slowly but surely that ripple effect will start to spread out. Again, maybe that's me being too much of an optimist, but rather than just trying to dismantle the system in its entirety, if we take it slowly but surely and dismantle it piece by piece, I do believe that we can start to really make changes. And, you know, that would be my piece. That I know you probably have something you want to say with regards to this as well.
You know, I do. Well, TC, if you don't mind, I just want to chime in right quick. Go ahead. Is it okay? All right.
I'm listening.
Now, when Benji brought George Floyd into his answer, and of course, the basic question was, you know, what do we do when a community is blocked out politically, governmentally, and, you know, pretty much made impotent by the system? And what do we do? I never imagined that Benji was going to talk about George Floyd. Now, this guy is really my son, because I would have started out with my answer. We periodically, as a community, we periodically have to resurrect George Floyd. And some people say, well, what does that mean? What do you mean, resurrect George Floyd? I don't mean physically, obviously. What I mean is we have to resurrect what got us out there in the first place with placards and protests, and mostly younger people protesting. But it wasn't exclusively younger people. It was also some of the older generation. And it brought generations together. It brought races together. It brought religions together. It brought people who otherwise maybe would not have been brought together. When we resurrect George Floyd in human history, not just American history, in human history, will be impactful for the rest of human history, I believe, because of the heinous crime that George Floyd suffered at the knee of Derek Chauvin. Everybody knows that, even though they might have different political views about it or whatever, but everybody knows George Floyd was murdered. And if George Floyd is resurrected, he cannot just be resurrected as George Floyd. He can't just be resurrected as our metaphorical brother. He can't be resurrected as black or white or any sort of generation or anything. He has to be resurrected as our child or as our parent. We know that the closest relationship that we have in life, when we're first born, getting back to that baby, he deserves all of the love in the world and has all of the love to give in the world. We are closest to our parents generally. We're closest to, as a parent, we're closest to that child. The parent-child relationship is pivotal in human history. There's nothing like it. George Floyd, in the resurrection of George Floyd, he has to be our child, literally, at that time. How would we like our child to suffer this way? How would we like our mother or our father to suffer this way? We put that into the phraseology now of community. And if we are able to communicate that soul to soul, heart to heart, within that community on any heinous issue, and the one that the caller was talking about, well, you know, what happens when a community is left out in the cold because of governmental activities and governmental repression? Well, then we have a community responsibility to resurrect George Floyd, because we have to think now of the community as our child, as our parents. not really separate human beings out there that maybe we can get along with, maybe we even love. But, boy, you know, the pivotal love in this world, there are three. Child, parent, so now lovers. You know, that husband-wife thing. And it all begins with, you know, the husband and wife getting together as parents, then having a child. And if we think of that community as our children, as our parents, and we don't want this parent of ours to suffer the way that George Floyd suffered. We don't want this child of ours to suffer the way that George Floyd suffered. And that child now is our community. That parent now is our community. Now, this is psychological. And we can put ourselves in that framework if we want to, if we own the media. Now, the media, major mass media, you know, it seems like an hour ago now, this show has been deep. When that lady asked, well, what about PBS? What about public broadcasting? And I said, well, you know, we couldn't do that in public broadcasting. Public broadcasting has been bought and sold. And I don't care who's hearing this right now. And the major mass media has been bought and sold. More and more, we have to create our own mass media. And I'm not talking about social media. I'm not talking about the contentiousness on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, especially TikTok. I'm not talking about people disliking people, putting people down. No, everyday people putting people down. Well, we all stay down. But everyday people thinking that we are a community in and of ourselves. Whoa, we can elevate ourselves. And if we use a symbol like George Floyd, something that gets to our gut as much as that did, gets to really our heart and soul and gets to our temper, and we say, man, no, we're not going to tolerate this thing to our child. It's happening to our parents. It happens to be now metaphorically our community. We'll go after them. And the best way to do that is to start our own communication among the people in our community. Find out what they really love. Find out what they really don't love. And work for them as if we were working for our child, working for our parents. And we can do that, but we don't communicate as much. So I say to the caller, one of the things that we can do to help ourselves is to drop away from major mass media, drop away from government, not in terms of letting government do what the hell they want, but what we can do is communicate within our own community, set up our own community group, because we love our communities and we love the people in there just as much as we love our children and our parents. And once we start to communicate, and I'm talking about deep communication, just like in this show right now, when we start talking about the things that really matter within our community, and even if we can't come up with all the answers, hey, we're talking. We're starting to communicate. And when you communicate, and my son mentioned Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, I'm a fan of both of those people, but I'm probably more a fan of Malcolm X. Told it like it was, and it still is. And, man, if we start – and if Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King got together, and they were going to back in the late 60s, well, actually, maybe the middle 60s because, you know, Malcolm died before that. He was murdered before Martin was. But if they ever did get together, boy, they would have been a powerhouse, and they had to be eliminated, maybe by the CIA or maybe, you know, by the forces that be. But if they did get together, the community would have been behind them. The community would have said, go, brother, go, sister, and they would have thought of Malcolm and Martin as their children and as their parents, as their loved ones, their relation. We have to start thinking of ourselves as a human family. A human family now. That's double entendre. We're human beings, but we're also part of a family. Child, parent, love. And see, once we start synergizing that way and we talk to our neighbors, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Even if we disagree, like Martin Luther King said, we can disagree. We can still hate somebody on the outside, but love them on the inside. He said about Bull Connor, one of the big racists of that time, I don't like Bull Connor, but I got to love Bull Connor because of my faith. So we can do the same thing within our community. We can love each other within our community. Oh, yes, love is a word that I won't drop because it's all-encompassing. We we can love each other and still not sometimes even like each other. Still have a little quabble and everything like that, a squabble. But at the same time, we know that we're working for a common goal. George Floyd can put us together here because there was almost nothing that got us together for the last 50 years, maybe Vietnam, but man, since then, I don't think that there was anything that got the public together like the death or murder of George Floyd. George Floyd should be resurrected every once in a while as our personal child, as our personal parent, and we should say, well, hey, nobody should suffer like George Floyd did. He's a symbol of suffering, and we don't want our communities to suffer that way. And so we start to talk, and then we don't fear getting out there, protesting for what we know is right. And the system will crumble that way. The system will give in to a better system because we have more numbers than the opposition. The opposition has very few numbers, but they got a lot of bucks, and they got a lot of power. But, man, power is in the people, and we can do that. So that's what I say.
Fantastic. You know what, guys? I have loved this show. You guys are really good. I think you're going to have to come back. I'm sorry, but we're running out of time. And I would just like to know if both of you or either one of you would like to have a last word before we leave.
Yeah, Benji gets the last word because it's all about Benji, really. Benji's the one who invited me into this. So, yeah, you say your piece there, brother.
Well, I mean, listen, Jenny, we so much has been said, so I'll keep this short and sweet. But we truly appreciated you having us on as a guest. I love that this is all a family affair. You're working with your son. I'm working with my father, and this is something that I think is so profound. And listen, together we can move mountains, and it starts with these discussions, and I'm so, so very, very thankful and grateful to have been a guest on your show. Thank you very much. We'd love to come back.
Well, you're welcome. And now I'd like to ask my co-host if he has something to say before we go.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Benji and Mr. Al Cole for being our guest today. He brought a lot of not only experience and insight, but real life experience to the conversation. I'm sure not only myself but the audience really appreciates that. And thankful for your platform, People of Distinction. And can you tell the audience how they can tune in and listen to some of your broadcast?
Yeah, I can provide that answer. Benji can too. Now, all people have to do is go to Apple Music. I think most people have some sort of Apple app. And with their Apple app, all they have to do is go into Apple Music, put in a search of People of Distinction. That's really all you have to do. Those three words, People of Distinction. And our show will come up. It's represented by our People of Distinction logo. And then you, of course, you press play and you can hear it. It's always 24/7. There's always something on our network, whether it be one of Benji's interviews. Sometimes it could be one of my reflections. But there's always something great on our network and something that is educative and inspiring and also very entertaining. Could be comedic sometimes, too. Benji's got a great sense of humor. So it could be all of that. But that's the way to get it. Apple Music. That's the most direct way. And I will ask one other thing. Actually, they can email us for other information on what we're doing. Or if anybody wants to get them, People with Distinction. Email this email address. Al@alcoholic.com. Al@alcoholic.com. Now, that comes from my CBS band base. At CBS Radio, my fans always used to say, Al, we love what you're doing there, brother. In fact, we're hooked on it. We're alcoholics. And so that was kind of like a clarion. Yeah, you get it. And so, that email address that you can get in touch with, not just me, but also Benji, al@alcoholic.com. And if you forget that, just Google the name Al Cole. My website will come up, and you can see, the contact information. But it's al@alcoholic.com. That's the one.
That's cute.
All right. Well, that works. I like it. You know, look at too many shows. Might have to go to a 12-step program. But, okay, I guess that wasn't funny. But anyway.
Well, I laughed.
Great. Well, great show, and definitely look forward to having you guys back on sometime. Yeah. All right, Jenny White.
Okay. Thanks again, guys. I really appreciated you. And, you know, I really like the show. I mean, I know that we kind of got away from your, you know, topic. Then there was things that we needed to talk about. So that's what happens on my show. And before we go, I just like to say that stay away from still, STILL people. They're still broke. They're still complaining. They're still hating. They're still losing. They're still not making a change. They're still living in the past, and they're still making excuses. So, again, stay away from still people, and you'll be okay. All right. That has been the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. I thank my guests, the Cole father and son, and I thank my co-host and all of my guests who called in, and I appreciate all of you. And now I'd like to say good night until next Friday, but tonight, this is it, and it has been the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. Good night. Have a good weekend.